The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack from the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from our state magazine. Today's reading of our state is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. And underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. Thank you, Carter Glass. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the June 2020 issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This is the annual coastal issue. It features Topsail Island. And last week I read the photo essay, as I usually do, but somehow I just talked too long. I guess I didn't get through it. If I just missed one picture, which is happens sometimes, that'd be okay, but I've missed several pictures here, so I'm just going to quickly pick up where I left off and then go right into the first main article. This picture in the photo essay is entitled Topsail Beach Skating Rink. At Topsail Beach, by day, Doris Jenkins is the local postmaster. By night, she's the skate lady, owner of the roller rink on the second floor. Whoever heard of a skating rink on a second floor of the post office? She and her husband, Joseph, built the rink themselves and opened for business in 1964. More than 55 years later, Doris welcomes a full house every summer, grandparents and parents and children, many of whom she knows by name. She's famous for playing music from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s on the 45 RPM records that older skaters remember from their childhood. Doris, now in her 80s, still laces up her own skates from time to time, gliding across the old maple floors to songs like White Silver Sands and One Night With You. I don't skate nothing fast, she says. I call it romantic music, because that's what me and my husband used to skate to. Under a sparkling disco ball, the same one from the 60s, the skaters go round and round. South Anderson Boulevard, topsail-beach-skating-rink.business.site. Wow, that's an unusual name. I'm sure you'll remember it, though. And the photos here show... I guess it's a sign outside. It says Tops Skating in big white wooden letters against green musical note scale in the background. And then some pink skates and tan-colored skate and a green skate. And they all have orange rollerblades on them. And to the right is where you rent them. They've got the racks and all of they've got... some reason they're not in logical order. The bottom row is 5, the next one up is 4, and then we jump to 7, and then 8, 9, and 10. And each of the colors is a lot of the colors are a little bit different to help distinguish the size, or maybe it's to distinguish a man's from a woman's size. Not really sure. Anyway, Overleaf, Surf City, Ocean Pier in Surf City. The fabulous fishing around Topsail, always an important part of the local culture, meant that there used to be many piers on this strip of land, at least 9 of them. Now, because of the way hurricanes, fires, and storms have shaped the island, there are just 3, one in each town. Isn't that convenient? Surf City Ocean Pier was the first, built in 1948 and purchased by the Lohr family in 1973. The following year, the pier was destroyed by a nor'easter, so the Lohrs rebuilt, then rebuilt again in 1996 after Hurricane Bertha and Fran. The family holds a special tournament for children who often cast their very first line off the pier in Surf City, kicking off a lifelong fascination with spot, drum, Spanish mackerel, and other gifts from the sea. There at 112 South Shore Drive, surfcityoceanpier.com, we have a shot underneath the pier, shot from the shallow water. There's There are two waves that are cresting right in front of us. The first one is cresting very nicely with a little bit of foam around the edge of the ragged curl. And the one behind it is all frothy and kicking up quite a storm into the air, all captured by the camera's very fast shutter speed. The lower part of the supports of the pier are all covered with barnacles, and then they get clean part way up. Oh, probably in the picture, maybe a third to a quarter of the way up. And then you see what looks like a vaulted ceiling up above, which is extra support for the pier itself, which is out of our view. Overleaf Soundside Park, and this is the last picture in the photo essay. Surf City, for all the ways that Topsail Island has preserved its past, there's one important thing that's changed. When the Surf City Swing Bridge was completed in 1955, it was an invitation to the Quiet Island. The bridge wasn't perfect. Traffic was stopped for an hour so that it could swing open for boats, and local drivers knew to plan their outings accordingly. But as the gateway to vacation, it was beloved. For six decades, the roar of tires on the old concrete and steel structure signaled to families that they were back on island time. As the bridge reached the end of its long life, the state made plans to replace it with a soaring new high-rise affair that would carry 65 cars 65 feet up and over the intercoastal waterway with plenty of room for boats beneath. A tribute to the old bridge remains in Southside Park, where a wooden replica along the boardwalk recalls its iconic seafoam green steel trusses, almost like the ones you remember. Here's a picture shot across a marsh. Used to be you could visit Soundside Park to see the swing bridge open and close for the boats. Now you can catch the sun setting behind the new bridge and enjoy a fishing pier, a playground, and an amphitheater. So we are shooting across first some brownish or gray seagrass and then some green grass right next to the water. And in the water we have a simple rowboat with no oarlocks nor a motor on it, anchored out. And then just beyond that, this would be the walking bridge that you can come out on with a little bit. It's a little bit raised over this little section of the canal, just big enough for a motorboat to pass underneath. And in the background, the brand new bridge with this gigantic T-shaped concrete trusses holding up the bridge itself. And so we get going with our first article here, The Return. What do you think is returning? Conservationist Jean Beasley is a living legend. Just like the sea turtle she rescues and rehabilitates, she embodies resilience and hope. And when she releases her turtles back into the watery wild, those we're watching find themselves thinking of home in a new way. So what we have here is we are on the shore of the ocean. The water is frothy. The waves aren't too high, but they are frothing over and coming up on shore and giving quite a wash. We have a big crowd of people all standing in the background. And in the foreground, we see two men with T-shirts on that say Sea Turtle Hospital and two people up front photographing a sea turtle that is have been released, and you can see a little bit beyond where the water frothed, where there were some marks as it moved its flippers there to get going, and now it would be a lot easier going as the water froths up around it. Can't really tell how big it is here, but I would guess it's perhaps 18 to 24 inches, more or less circular or oval type shape. His head is out. He or she is moving. Let's see what the caption says. A crowd gathers on Topsail Beach to cheer on the sea turtles that have been nursed back to health at the Karen Beasley Turtle Rescue and Rehabilitation Center. Okay, and now we'll get going on the article. I'm face to face with a sea-wizened mask, a 280-pound loggerhead sea turtle making burbling sounds in his tank. They call him Big Guy. His plum-sized eyes, so gentle and steady, contained shadows of the ancient. If I could stare longer, I might even say they were mystical. But he is gone too fast, submerged. A year ago, Big Guy was cold stunned in the waters off Cape Lookout, his belly full of garbage that he'd swallowed at sea. He was nursed back to health here in Surf City at the Karen Beasley Sea Turtle Rescue and Rehabilitation Center. The entirely volunteer-run operation is led by one tireless visionary, Gene Beasley. With intense brown eyes and a constant smile, Gene moves with the calm practicality that comes from a life spent nurturing the injured. And here she is, white-haired, relatively short white hair, with a big sea turtle hospital blue shirt, leaning up against a great big tank and smiling, as they say she always does. Today is release day, the hospital's most public, emotional, and ceremonial day. The day when 19 turtles, including loggerheads, greens, and Kemp's Ridleys, summoned residents for more than a year, returned to the ocean. As a songwriter, I can't help but turn the word release over in my mind, thinking of the Bob Dylan song, Release from the Past, Release from Misgivings, from Fear. I wonder if Big Guy senses that his release is coming, that he's going home. I want to see the turtle, Mama. My 3-year-old daughter, also named Jean, has been talking about Big Guy for weeks, ever since we found out about the release. She says turtle without the R. I hold her up for a look into the big blue tank. Big Guy was sick, she asks. She knows the answer. Yes, baby, I say. But now he's going home. She nods her head and raises her eyebrows as if the world makes perfect sense and she understands everything. She's too young to know about getting home and staying there, and it's no simple task, and not even our own devising sometime. More than just comfort or shelter, home is where we operate best, where we resonate most truly. But what is an honest slog of trial and error for humans to find that place of greatest thriving is for sea turtles a game of dodgeball with man-made garbage. And yet, we all press on, because once at home, we all can do what we know to do. A singer sings, a turtle swims. This hospital is a home of sorts for 84-year-old Gene Beasley. It's a complicated, hard-won refuge for turtles, of course, but also for the people who want to help them. Gene, a former teacher and school administrator, collects the injured, nurses them, inspires them, and sends them back to where they belong. Some of the volunteers helping at the hospital have been with her from the beginning, since 1997, when she first established this turtle hospital in Topsail Beach. There were turtles everywhere, she says, even in the bathroom. In the late 1970s, a chance beach encounter with a nesting sea turtle sparked the Beasley family's interest in the creatures. A decade later, Jean's daughter Karen founded the Topsail Turtle Project. After Karen was diagnosed with leukemia in her mid-20s, Jean also devoted herself to protecting sea turtles and their nests. As Karen's health diminished, she asked her mother to use her life insurance money to continue the mission of helping sea turtles. Somehow, this steely, bright-eyed woman with a hurricane of a heart managed to turn heartbreak, a fear that I, like any parent, dare not let cross my lips, into 14,000 square feet of healing, with a sick bay, a convalescent unit, an isolation room, and an intensive care unit. There are interns and junior interns, turtle jacuzzis, turtle taxis, dozens of giant blue tanks, and cases of salt stacked in the back hallway. All of it is dedicated to the rehabilitation and release of sick and injured sea turtles found up and down the seacoast, or rather the east coast. This morning, people pack the lobby shoulder to shoulder as Gene stands on a ramp above us. Soon the turtles will be moved to the beach. Many of the volunteers will be releasing a turtle that they have cared for daily, weekly, and for months on end. Slowly and with deep purpose, Gene speaks the name of each turtle and the volunteer who's cared for it. Everyone here knows that release day is about more than a turtle taking a difficult step. It's about the honor of sharing difficult steps together and an acknowledgement that the difficult step of loving and letting go. Each of the turtles takes a piece of me, Jean says. I can't protect them anymore. They're going right back to where they got in trouble, but it's where they need to be. In 1974, scientists Archie Carr and Patrick Coleman published findings on how sea turtle migration is connected to the geophysics of seafloor spreading. The green sea turtles they studied migrated 1,200 miles each year from Brazil to the remote Ascension Islands, their birthplace, to lay their eggs. Some say strange magnetic forces in the sand draw them home. Once a neighborhood trip, the turtles return now takes months as they navigate 100 million years of continental drift. For Jean's turtles, hazards like fishing nets, motor boats, or pieces of swallowed plastic prompt a detour to the hospital up in Surf City. Their new journey begins a few miles south at Topsail Beach with a brigade of pickup trucks carting turtles and volunteers to a designated spot on the shore. By the time they arrive, the area is already full of locals, grade school classes, and bathing-suited, sun-screened, water-bottled onlookers. Eventually, hundreds will line the beach. One year, more than 1,000 people turn out to watch. Jean waits until the last possible moment to share the release date, but no matter what, there's always a crowd. "Okay, we're missing some kids," shouts an elementary school teacher crisscrossing the sand corridor cordoned off for the turtles in search of students. "Everybody out of the middle," a volunteer yells. "Everybody! The people on the sides!" Her instructions are drowned out by sirens heralding the fire department's arrival. "Loose kids walk the sand aisle," volunteers shoo them. The National Fire Protection Association mascot, a fireman dressed as Sparky the Fire Dog, appears at the top of the dune behind us. My Jean pulls my dress. "Where is Big Guy?" "He's coming, baby. Let's go get a good seat." Now that there's an audience, I find myself speaking of the release in show terms. The hushed nuance of the pre-show ceremony has given way to a friendly spectacle. I'm determined for Jean to see the ancient reptile's gentleness, so I weave through the bodies to get her to the front row. "But where is Big Guy?" she sighs, looking around. "I want cheese crackers, Mama. Jean is barefoot, knows no bedtime, and depends on me as her dispensary of all things. Snacks, hats, sunscreen, soap, life." "Move out of the way of the turtles," somebody yells. "They're here," a child shouts. Everyone turns their eyes off stage, up the beach to the dunes. We take a collective breath. Within that quiet, I think about how, similar to one of these turtles I once was, 6 months pregnant, I boxed up my New York City life and returned home to Raleigh. Small spaces, high prices, falling music revenues. The city didn't make as much sense as I desperately wanted it to. I had no idea how I would go out on tour once the baby came. I had spent every waking breath building a life in which I was a songwriter and a musician first. I could not fathom who or what I would be on the other side of this journey. I only knew to follow the magnetic heartbeat of the sand lumbering home to shore with my ache. Seagulls throw shadows. The ocean breaks in regular rhythm. Jean Beasley leads a procession to the water and then perches on a stool right on the precarious spot where sand and water meet. Children march seaward with large volunteer cardboard placards introducing each turtle. Volunteer partners follow one by one, ushering the turtles down the sandy aisle. The turtles light up, feeling the water. Flippers reach and find speed. Then the relief of salt water when they are suddenly weightless. The volunteers wade into and wave, tears wetting their cheeks as the animals they've cared for disappear into the silence underwater. The crowd, the audience, claps and cheers and jostles to see. Two drones fly overhead. Three evening news anchors narrate into microphones with their pants rolled up. Someone is playing a ukulele. Photographers with huge, gaping lenses stalk each trudging turtle. A dozen or so people take turtle-backed selfies. My feet sink into wet sand. All around there's much joy and hope. Still, I wish for the turtles the privilege of quiet. It's comforting to know that they have a shell, My Jean is swept up in all the pageantry, but then tires of it quickly. In the chaos, I can't tell what exactly is center stage. I look to Jean Beasley, a patient mother of all things. Water is nearly lapping her stool, but she doesn't notice. She watches each turtle as though no one else is around. Someday I'll explain to my Jean that meaning doesn't require a spotlight, that the most important things that have ever happened to me were not the public ones, but the tiny moments when no one saw it all. Big guy is the headliner. The grand finale on the hot sand. Off stage, he waits, calm at first, and then restless. His caretaker scratches his shell and neck, talks to him, shields him from the mounting sun. She's cooing, quietly singing. I strain my ears to listen. I close my ears to, or eyes to hear. The physical feat of heaving big guys nearly 300 pounds down the sand of the water requires a turtle taxi, a vehicle Jean and her team devised using the chassis of a surfboard cart. And the sweat and strength of four people shouting, counting, and lifting together. At the edge of the noise and fanfare at the moment of his release, Big Guy seems to pause. Before him is the sea. Behind him is the woman who whispered in his ear and saved his life. Beneath him is the sand he has not felt in more than a year. A wave rushes to him, and in only a few lurching moments, he disappears behind a curtain of water, his life no longer visible to us. Now his real work begins. Jean Beasley, shaded by the brim of a baseball cap, intently surveys the waves. She has studied the currents and the water temperature to ensure ideal conditions for the turtles. The words she spoke to us a few hours ago take on a kind of immediacy now. We have done what we can, even if they don't make it much past the first wave. They are real sea turtles again, back home. When you need to send us more, we are ready. I pull those words close and tuck them into my pocket to unfold later. My Jean is pulling on my dress again. I'm hungry, she pleads. Her cheeks are flushed. For her, the show is over. I wipe sand from her face, offer her a drink of water. I think of the young woman singing to Big Guy, her tan hands, her face pressed to her shell, her quiet caretaking, the truly beautiful sound of her tenderness, a sound worth marking, worth witnessing, worth repeating again and again. That spare sound, the sound of loving, if I could write that song. But that song is Jean Beasley. Mama, I want to go home, my Jean says. I rub my cheek in her hair as if it were deep as the ocean. Written by Tift Merritt, Grammy Award-winning nominated singer-songwriter and a contributor to Oxford American. She lives in Raleigh. We have a couple of sidebars. The first one says, Salty Turtle Beer Company in Surf City. On Topsail Island, sea turtles are a huge part of the community, says Dan Callender, co-owner of Salty Turtle Beer Company. So when he and his business partners, Dean Kelly and Zach White, decided to open their Surf City Brewery, one of the first things they did was contact the Karen Beasley Sea Turtle Rescue and Rehabilitation Center. Right from the get-go, we wanted to donate a quarter of our sales for a certain type of beer to the Sea Turtle Hospital, Callender says, and that's what we've done ever since we opened. Since 2017, Salty Sea Turtle Beer has donated more than $5,000 to the hospital, and they've continued to build on that relationship. The brewery hosts some of the hospital's meetings and symposiums, and Callender says that many of its volunteers have become like family after 2 years of coming in weekly for after-work drinks. In November of last year, when Salty Turtle began canning its beer, it became the first brewery in North Carolina to use biodegradable four-pack rings rather than the traditional plastic rings, which threaten marine life like sea turtles. The packaging, made from barley and wheat byproducts, created when making beer, is even safe for animals to eat. We felt like this was one little thing we could help with, Callender says. Saving sea turtles isn't the only cause they're helping, though. Salty Turtle also partners with area nonprofits for events and community pint nights, where a portion of the proceeds are donated to the local Humane Society, veterans groups, both Callender and Kelly are former Marines, and other local organizations. Any type of nonprofit, we pretty much say yes to for pint nights, Callender says. It's our way to give back to the local community. And one other brief sidebar says our state knows best. Sea turtles. Want to know how you can be more like Jean Beasley? We asked her and three other expert protectors to tell us what makes sea turtles so special and to share their best advice for keeping them safe. Plus, find out how to spot North Carolina's sea turtles in the wild. Hint, they dig the dark. Sea turtles are charismatic, wonderful, ancient creatures that deserve a place in our hearts, Jean says. For more from our experts, visit ourstate.com/OS. That's our state. OS knows best. That's ourstate.com/OS knows best. For a little time left, we will see if we can get through this next article, which is fairly short. Since they've left the page over here. Time stands still. On the coast changes a way of life, but for a father and his young sons, a recent trip to Ocean Pier turned out to be a halcyon day and a golden memory. This is a Drew Perry story. I don't do him a whole lot of favors by cutting him off, but I hope I can finish reading for my favorite author. When this is all over, my boys asked me, can we go back to Topsail and eat burgers? It took me a moment to answer them. We were then 3 weeks into quarantine. The rhythms of our lives so utterly altered as to render even the days of the week mostly meaningless. When I caught my breath, I said, of course we can. In fact, we have to. A bit of history. Beach-wise, I'm a bucket of bad beer guy. Fried shrimp. I'm an out-of-towner. I'm a vacationer who tries to leave only footprints and tries to keep his kids from leaving those footprints in the dunes. So when a friend asked, I'm not even sure why, if I'd ever had a pier burger, I said, a what? Who eats a burger on the beach? What even is such a thing? We day-tripped it. The boys and I, we'd been having a really hard week, me yelling at the kids for everything and nothing, and them yelling right back, and I wanted to jolt us out of wherever we were. We drove 3 hours each way to have 2 hours barefoot on the beach on a day that wanted hoodies and hats, and I took them alone, my wife catching me in the driveway saying, are you sure you don't want company? It was a recipe for calamity, but somehow we had a quiet ride of reading and podcasts and no screens at all, and we came over the bridge and saw the ocean, and oh, I don't know what happened or how it happened. We landed on the Seaview Fishing Pier, whose namesake restaurant is housed in a country singer's former recording studio, as evidenced by the 20-foot-long guitar shingled out on the side of the building. We ordered at the counter. And I should never have started this because I can't finish it. I don't remember this ever happening before. Ah, we'll blame it on coronavirus. I'm sorry. We've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions? Call the studios, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.